Hey, welcome to the shiur and Maral Guraya in Parshas Mishpatim. I wanted to take a look tonight at the start, at least, with two comments from the Maharal on two separate Rashis towards the end of the Sefer. The end of the Sefer describes some of the events that surround Matan Torah. According to Rashi, at least, these are some of the events that take place prior to Matan Torah, prior to the giving of the Torah. And they're two rather short Rashis where the Maharal gets involved in explaining these Rashis and touches on some, I think, some basic questions just in terms of the chronology of Chumash itself and some of the events that take place. So in Perek Chof Dalad, Pasuk Dalad, it says that Vayichtav Moshe Kol Divrei Hashem. Moshe wrote down all of the words of Hashem. Again, this is taking place at Har Sinai. According to Rashi, this is taking place in the days leading up to the giving of the Torah. Moshe writes down all the words of Hashem. Vayashkim Vavokir Vayivim Yisrach Tachas Ahar. He woke up in the morning and built an altar at the foot of the mountain. What does it mean that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote down all the words of Hashem? So writes Rashi, Vayichtov Moshe Mibreishis V'ad Matan Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu at this point in the story wrote down the first fifth or so of the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu transcribed all of Sefer Bereishis, the beginning of Sefer Shmos up until the giving of the Torah, the Kosav Mitzvot Shenitzavu V'mara. And Moshe Rabbeinu also wrote down the Mitzvot which the Jewish people were commanded at Mara. Again, if you recall, we saw actually just 2 weeks ago, the Pasuk says in Parshas Beshalach by Mara, when the Jews had just crossed over the Red Sea, Sham Sam Malchoko Mishpat, the Sham Yisahu, there the Ribbono Shel Olam gave certain laws to the Jewish people, and Rashi writes that the laws that he gave them were Shabbos, Para Aduma, and Dinim, the laws of how to adjudicate disputes. Even though, interestingly enough, we don't have that written down in Parshas Beshalach, according to Rashi, it sounds like Moshe Rabbeinu in some form wrote that down over here. Okay, so that's Rashi. Seems simple enough. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote a text of gracious plus at this particular point in time. Jumps in the Maharal and he says, wait a minute. There's a Machlokas in the Gemara in Gittin, Basanus, about the manner in which the Torah was written down during the desert years. One opinion says Torah, Megillah, Megillah, Nitna, that the Torah was written down scroll by scroll. In other words, as the events unfolded. So Moshe Rabbeinu wrote down the events and the laws as they happened. And the other opinion holds Torah Chasuma Nitna. The Torah was given literally totally complete, which is generally understood to mean that Moshe Rabbeinu only wrote down the Torah at all at the end of the 40 years. It's interesting to note the conception that some people have that Moshe Rabbeinu had wrote down the entire text of the Torah at Har Sinai itself is not an option in the Gemara. And again, if you think about it, it's logical. It's a little bit bizarre to imagine Moshe Rabbeinu writing down, for instance, the story of the spies, you know, writing down the story of how he hit the rock and wasn't allowed to go into Eretz Yisrael. It's a little bit, you know, bizarre to imagine those stories being written down and then given to the Jewish people before they happened. You know, so what does that mean? What would that mean? You know, so the Jewish people knew what role they were supposed to play. Moshe Rabbeinu knew that he was going to hit the rock. So why did he hit the rock, right? So we don't have to play any of those mind games. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu either wrote down the Torah bit by bit as it was happening, as it was revealed to him, you know, the laws in whatever sequence they were revealed to him, the stories as they were happening, or alternatively, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote down the whole thing at the end. It comes to Maharal and he says as follows. So, if you hold that Torah, Megillah, Megillah, Nitna, that the Torah was written bit by bit as the Jews, you know, experienced those various events in the desert. So this statement of Rashi, that Moshe Rabbeinu at this point writes down the gracious plus the first couple of parshios of Sefer Shmos, fits right into that that perspective that the Torah was being written down gradually. But if one takes the perspective that Torah Chasuma Nidna, that the Torah was only written down at the end of the 40 years, which seems to mean that the Torah was not written down at all. I mean, with the possible exception of the Aseret HaDibros, but I mean, otherwise there was no work in progress of the Torah being written down. The Torah was revealed at Har Sinai. In other words, the mitzvot were revealed at Har Sinai, but the actual text of the Torah wasn't put down on parchment till the end of the 40 years. So how does that jive with Rashi's statement over here? Is Rashi taking sides in this dispute? How do you work all of this out? So, writes the Maral as follows. Ulamanda Omer HaPerek HaYizok in Torah Hasuma Nitna Firish Lo Nitna HaTorah LeYizroh Rach Hasuma. According to the opinion that holds that the Torah was given as a complete whole to the Jewish people at the end of the 40 years of the desert, meaning it was only written down at the end of the 40 years. So then the question is, how do you relate that to the statement in Rashi over here? Says the Maral, the right Rashi's statement over here is consistent with both opinions. Even if you hold that the Torah was only written down at the end of the 40 years, it was written down at the end of the 40 years in the role of Torah. What Moshe Rabbeinu is writing down at this point, gracious, and the first couple of parashiyos of Sefer Shmos, is not Torah per se, but rather it's the Sefer HaBris, the Book of the Covenant. What's this Book of the Covenant? So if you read a little bit further out of the Chumash, right, just in Pasuk Zayin, it says, Vayikach Sefer HaBris, Vayikra Be'osnei Ha'am, right, Moshe Rabbeinu, after some sacrifices had been offered, took this Book of the Covenant, he read it in the ears of, you know, so that the people could hear. Vayomru, and the people said, Kol Asher Dibar Hashem Nasa V'Nishma. Everything that Hashem has said, we will do and we will hear. The famous Nasa V'Nishma is here at the end of Asher's Mishpatim. What's the Sefer HaBris? Says Rashi, on Pasuk Zayin, V'Breishus V'Amatan Torah, Mitzvot Shirtavu V'Mara. From Breishus to the giving of the Torah, and the Mitzvot that were given in Mara. In other words, the Sefer HaBris is identical to that which was described just a few psukim earlier, that Vayichtov Moshe is called Divrei Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote down the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So says the Maral, he wrote it as a Sefer HaBris, as a Book of the Covenant, not as Torah. Now, what does that mean? On the surface, that distinction, you know, at this point, we don't understand what that distinction means exactly. So it is Torah, right? It's the first 23% of Torah, right? So what do you mean it's not Torah, it's the Sefer HaBris? So let's see. The Akakak was so far boy in Kosov Kala Torah Yachad. It was only afterwards, at the end of the 40 years, that he wrote down the whole Torah as a unit. So if the Maral, it's clear that what I'm saying is correct, that you can, that even the one that holds that you can write down the Torah, that the Torah was only written down in its entirety at the end of the 40 years, would acknowledge that a quote-unquote partial Torah that was the so-called Sefer HaBris, the Book of the Covenant, could be written in advance, because the Chilaman, the Omar Torah, Chasuma Nidna, Ein Kosvin Megillah Sota. After Maral as follows, we know that the Torah later on in Parshas Sotah and Bamidbar is going to describe how when a woman is a Sota, she's suspected of adultery, so there's a scroll which is written out with certain sukkim, and that scroll is blotted out into water, and she's made to drink the water. You know, she goes through the whole experience of the sofa. Let me ask you a question, says the Maral. Let's say that a situation of sofa came up during the 40 years that the Jews were in the desert. So the calling goes to write down the sukkim from Chumash that are described as the Megillah sofa. Would anyone stop the calling and say, wait a minute, the Gemara in Gittin says, Torah Chasuma Nitna, that the Torah is only allowed to be written down at the end of the 40 years, so stop what you're doing, don't write down the Megillah Sota, right? Because the Megillah Sota, after all, is part of Torah, right? It's taken from the Chumash. Clearly not, says the Maral, right? Why? Because the psukim from the Megillah Sota that are being written down are not written down in the context of serving as Torah, they serve the function of that mitzvah of Sota. So in other words, even if you hold Torah Chasuma Nidna, that means the Torah as Torah is written down at the end of the 40 years, but excerpts from Torah that serve a mitzvah purpose could be written down earlier. It's interesting, I would think that there's a much more obvious example rather than Sota, which the Maharal doesn't quote, Tfillin. Right? We assume that they had Tfillin during the 40 years that they were in the desert. It's not such a simple assumption, because after all, the last two parshios of the Tfillin are only revealed in Sefer Dvarim, right? But there's certainly many opinions, you know, that assume maybe that's the simple reading of the halacha, that the Jews wore Tfillin while they were in the desert. So what's in the Tfillin? Excerpts from the Torah. Right? If you hold Torah Chasuma Nitna, the Torah was only written down at the end of the 40 years. So how do they have the parashiyot to put in the Tfillin? I think the answer is along the lines that the Maharal is saying. That when you write down a section of Torah, not to serve as Torah, but to service some other mitzvah, that's not what the Gemara was talking about when it said that the Torah was only written down, you know, at the end of the 40 years. So too over here. So the Book of the Covenant, which contains Bereishis, the beginning of Shmos, and the mitzvot of Marah, is not meant to be the first installment of the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. You know, it's not like the Torah is coming out as a serial publication, you know, and stay tuned, you know, next week we'll have, you know, we'll see what happens after Matan Torah, you know, you'll read the next installment. No, the Sefer HaBris is the equivalent of Tfillin, it's the equivalent of the Megillah Sotah. It's a mitzvah which utilizes a passage from the Torah. Now, in this case, it happens to be a very long passage from the Torah, from the beginning all the way into the middle of Sefer Shmos, but apparently the Ribbono Shel Olam, as part of the procedure of Matan Torah, wants Moshe Rabbeinu to write this thing called the Sefer HaBris, to read it to the Jewish people. So writing down the Sefer HaBris is not the first step towards writing down Torah. It's the equivalent of writing a mezuzah. It's the equivalent of writing Tfillin. It's utilizing an excerpt from Torah to fulfill a mitzvah which the Jews have in the desert. The Ilulah Hayakam mitzvah of the Gilah Hayakasha. You're right, says the Maharal. If there had been no mitzvah of writing down the Book of the Covenant, and Moshe Rabbeinu on his own decided to go and write part of the Torah, that would be difficult. That would not be able, we would not be able to easily reconcile that with the position at all. Torah Chasuma Nidna. Avon Hashta. Shayez et Torah Mitzvah lo yikshik klal. But now that we understand that writing down the Sefer HaBris was necessary as a mitzvah, so this doesn't fly in the face of the idea of Torah Chasuma Nidna at all. The writing down of the Book of the Covenant is not called a step in the writing down of the Torah. Its only purpose is to facilitate the covenant which is being put into place between between the Ribbono Shel Olam and Klal Yisrael. So in other words, Rashi is consistent with either opinion. You know, he's not taking sides in this machlokas and gittin as to whether the Torah was given by, you know, Megillah at a time, or whether the Torah was written down at the very end of the 40 years. Writes the Maharal, the Hare'im, Pirish B'Shem HaTosos, Tirit Bacher, V'Zen Nachom. The Eliyahu Mizrahi, again, who we know in so many ways is, in a sense, you know, the Maharal's nemesis, you know, the earlier... I don't really mean it that way, you know, but so much of the Maharal is reacting to comments that the Mizrahi makes in explaining Rashi, which the Maharal disagrees with. The Mizrahi over here brings a Tosfos who gives a different approach, and the Maharal says that what I said is correct. What's the approach of Tosfos? So Tosfos in Gittin, that Samach HaMed Aleph, brings this very question. Right? In other words, how can you say, how can there be opinion, how do you reconcile the opinion that Torah Chasuma Nidna with the statement of Rashi, again, in the passage of Rashi, Rashi quoting Chazal, that the contents of the Sefer HaBris are gracious, Shmos, or, you know, Shmos up the Matan Torah, and the mitzvahs of Mara. How do you reconcile those things? So come Tosus with a Chiddush, right, Tosus? The Nira Lafarish. Even though the conventional understanding of Torah Chasuma Nidna
is that the Torah was only written down at the end of the 40 years. Says Tosafot, I don't think that's what it means. When it says that the Torah was chasuma nitna, it means that it was written down in order, says Tosus, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it wasn't written down piecemeal. What do you mean? There are some parshios that were revealed orally to Moshe Rabbeinu first, even though when the Torah was actually written down, the parshios which were revealed earlier were written down at a later point in the Torah itself. Right? To take an example, right? We mentioned Parah Aduma. Right, so Parah Aduma appears in the Chumash in Parshas Chukat. I mean, the Chumash and Chumash Torah are almost over already at that point. Again, we have a tradition, the Gemara records in Kitzin, that the Parsha of Parah Aduma was actually taught to the Jewish people on the first of Nisan, on the day in which the Mishkan was set up, towards the very beginning of the 40 years that the Jewish people were in the desert. So here it is, it's written down in a place in Chumash, which is almost at the end, but in point of fact, orally, it was revealed to the Jewish people much earlier. So says Tosfos, although the Parshios might have been revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu in a certain order, they were written down only once HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him the green light to write down the parshios in the order in which they were supposed to be written. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't write down Parshas Parah Aduma on the first of Nisan, in the second year when they left Mitzrayim. He only wrote down the Parshas Parah Aduma after the rebellion of Korach, right, as described in the Chumash. Right? So in other words, according to Tosfos, Torah Chasuma Nidna means the Torah was written down in the sequence in which we have it. Interestingly, so what emerges according to that? So the other opinion is Torah Megillah Megillah Nitna means that the Torah was stitched together and revealed out of order. In other words, Torah Megillah Megillah Nitna means that Parshas Parah Aduma was revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu, was written down by Moshe Rabbeinu back in Rosh Chodesh Nisan of the second year when they left Mitzrayim, and he kept it on a separate piece of parchment. And then, he cut and paste, he put it into a certain place in Chumash later on, but, the parashios may have been written out of order and then rearranged at some later point. So the machlokas, according to Tosfos, going to Torah, Megillah, Megillah, Nitna, Torah, Chasuva, Nitna, everybody agrees that the Torah was written piecemeal. The only question is, was it written piecemeal and in order, or piecemeal and out of order? What drives Tosfos to give this interpretation? This very question that is bothering the Maharal. You see, everybody holds that the Torah is written piecemeal. That the Torah was written down, prior to Matan Torah, up until the point of Matan Torah. Says the Maharal, I don't think the explanation of Tosfos is necessary at all. Because in my understanding, the function of the Sefer HaBris is to serve not as Torah, it doesn't have Kedushah Torah in any way. Right? It has, the same Kedusha we would associate with Tzukim, but it doesn't have the Kedusha of a Sefer Torah in any way. It's the fulfillment of the mitzvah of writing down a Sefer HaBris, which was a one-time mitzvah given to Moshe Rabbeinu, and in that sense, it's like a mitzvah of filling the Parsha of Sota or any other aspect, element of Torah which is written down in order to fulfill a specific mitzvah, right? So it's an interesting approach that Maharal gives over here, and we see it stands in marked contrast to the approach of Tosfos. Right, so Emul Gam Uchar Batara means that although the Torah is written down in such a way, in a certain sequence, the sequence is not necessarily a chronological sequence. So Torah, in other words, Tosfos' interpretation of Torah Chasuma Nitna is not at odds with the principle Emul Gam Uchar Batara for the following reason. Tosfos is just saying, if you told Torah Chasuma Nitna, it means Ribbono Shel Olam told Moshe Rabbeinu write it down in this order, and he wrote it down in that order. Now, that order is not a chronological order, right? Ein mukta mu'uchar batara. It's whatever cheshbon the Ribbono Shel Olam had in writing it down in that order. But, you know, that's something distinct from the idea that the Torah, you know, is out of chronological order, which everybody acknowledges is true to an extent. You know, we've seen before, it's Machlokas Rishonim, how far, you know, to take that idea that the Torah is out of chronological order. Okay, so that's, I think, an interesting, you know, approach that the Maharal has over here, just in terms of a Rashi that on the surface looks kind of innocuous, but actually opens up the door to a much bigger discussion. The next Rashi and Maharal that will start now, we'll probably end up finishing after Maharal, is a one-word Rashi. Okay, so one word in Rashi, you know, can still generate quite a bit of discussion. So Moshe Rabbeinu has just written down the Sefer HaBris, right? And he sets up a Mizbeach, he sets up an altar. Vayishlach, Pasuk says, Perek Chaftal, Pasuk A, Vayishlach says, Na'arei B'nei Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu sends the young men of the Jewish people, Vayalu Olos, and they offered up burnt offerings. Vayivbuch Uzvachin Shlomim Lashem Parim, and then they offered up peace offerings, shlomim, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which consisted of parim, which consisted of bullocks. In other words, these young men brought karbanos. They brought sacrifices. Who were these young men? Says Rashi, Hadachoros. These young men were the firstborn among the Jewish people. That's all Rashi says. Now clearly what Rashi is referring to is the concept that before the Kohanim and Levim were charged with doing Avoda in the Mishkan and later the Beit HaMikdash, originally the concept of performing the Avoda was given to the Bechorim, right, to the firstborn. I know Rashi writes, you know, back in the beginning of Parshas Toldos, that was part of the back and forth between Yaakov and Esau. When Yaakov sought to acquire the Bechorah, the rights of the firstborn from Esau, so, you know, he wasn't just looking for a bigger piece of salami for dinner, right? He wanted the right to, not that the firstborn necessarily gets the bigger salami at dinner, but whatever. You know, Yaakov wanted from Esau the right to be able to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Esau said, yeah, that's a great idea. I'm going to go die, yeah. It's not such a good thing having the responsibility to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you mess up, HaKadosh Baruch Hu kills you. So in an instant, in a heartbeat, it says Esau, I would sell you the Bechorah, I would sell you the right to bring Karbanos and do Avodah and the like. Right? So as you see from there, that at a certain point in history, you know, the Bechorim, it's the firstborn who are bringing sacrifices, and this is still at this point in history, hence the Narei B'nai Yisrael, hence, you know, these young men from B'nai Yisrael are the firstborn who are bringing Karbanos at the foot of Mount Sarnam. So that's the Narei on that. As Narei HaBechoros, Pirush, that is to say, the Azayim Onisla Bechoros Milavara Shechatu Bo'edo. When did the firstborn lose this right to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It was after the Jews built Eglazov, the golden calf, right? Because the Bechorim, you know, took part in that terrible sin the same way everybody else did. The only ones who stood up and did what was right was the tribe of Levi, right? Moshe Rabbeinu comes back and says, Mi Hashem Eli, where is the Hashem side? Come to my side. All the B'nai Levi come to him. So at that point, that's when the Avodah was transferred from the Bechorim to the B'nai Levi. Right? And this is still before all of that. Comes to Maharal, he has the following question. Yaakov gav d'nemer parshas v'yatsa titzaver lasos v'gadim la'aron kodem shechotu ha'bechoros v'imkein lama yiyu nidachem yavodosem adayim ochotu. Wait a minute, says the Maharal. Let's do the chronology over here. Right? After Parshas Mishpatim, we're going to have Parshas Truma, which talks about the building of the Mishkan, and then Parshas Tetzaveh, which talks about the special clothing which Aaron and his sons are going to wear to serve as Kohanim.
And the Chet Ha'Egel, the sin of the golden calf, isn't going to be until the next parasha, Parashas Kisisa. So in other words, the Torah seems to indicate that special clothing is being set aside for Aaron and his sons to serve as Kohanim even before that transfer of Havoda happens from the Bechorim to the Levim. Right? In other words, Aaron and the Kohanim are already special even before the Chet Ha'Egel. So how do you understand that, says the Maharal. Says the Maharal, well, maybe one answer is as follows. So Haladas, Rashi, Pashas, Kisisa, Homalecha, Tamish, Konakar, Maitre, Ha'ego, Nisabra, Moshe, Olav. Rashi holds, later on, that Ein Mukta, Mamukha, Vatara, right? Most of Pashi is Mukhuma, Shabbat, in chronological order. So in other words, according to Rashi, the chronology is that the Jewish people received the Torah, they then sinned with the golden calf, and only after they sinned with the golden calf were they told to build the Mishkan. So in other words, Parshas Truma actually comes after Parshas Kisisa, chronologically. And if that's the case, says the Maharal, although Rashi doesn't say this explicitly, it stands to reason that Parshas Tetzaveh, that describes the Big Day Kahuna, the special clothing that the Kohanim would wear, is also chronologically after Parshas Kisisa. So that would be the easiest answer, says the Maharal. In other words, that you're right, you know, all the discussion about the special clothing of the Kohanim, who, and they're described explicitly as the Kohanim Bnei Aaron, right? All of the discussion about them having special clothing was only really told to the Jewish people after the Chet Ha'Egel, after the sin of the golden calf. Okay, so Rashi, it would work out swimmingly, beautifully. The only problem is, not everybody agrees with Rashi. The Ramban writes explicitly that the commandment to build the Mishkan came before the Chet Ha'Egel, the sin of the golden calf. In other words, Truma chronologically is before Kisisa. And presumably the Ramban would also say that the Tzavah is also chronologically before Kisisa. So in other words, the Jews were told to build the Mishkan, and they were told to set aside special clothing for Aaron and his sons to serve as Kohanim. And all of this is before the Bechorim were disqualified. So how does that fit after Maharal? I mean, it's already foreshadowing the fact that the Bechorim are going to be disqualified. That doesn't sound very fair, right? So how are we going to work that one out? Tune in after Maharal. And we'll see the Maharal gives a very interesting approach to how this worked with the Bechorim, the Kohanim, and how all of this ended up working together. Hey, welcome to the second part of the Shir on Maharal Guraya and Pashas Mishpatim. We left off before Maharal with the following question of the Maharal, which the Maharal to Perakov Dalad, Kosakei. Rashi there indicates that the Bechoros, that the firstborn, were involved in doing the Avoda and during the divine service, basically from the beginning of time, it sounds like, up until the Chet Ha'Egel, up until the sin of the golden calf. Says the Maharal, according to the Ramban, who says that the Parshios of the Tzara, Mishpatim, Truma, Tetzaveh, Kisisa are all in chronological order, so what emerges is the following. Parshas Tetzaveh describes how Aaron and his sons were given the mitzvah of wearing the special Big Day Kahuna and, the special vestments that are associated with the Kohanim. But all of that is before the Chet Ha'Egel. All of that is before the sin of the golden calf. Which means that, in theory, the Bechorim, the firstborn, should have been the ones doing the Avoda. So how is it that the Torah is talking about making special garments for Aaron and his sons as Kohanim? Where did Aaron and his sons come into the picture? It's still the province of the Bechorim, of the firstborn, to do the Avoda up until the Chet Ha'Egel. So writes the Maharal as follows. Afilu in Toma Shekodim Ha'Egel Nesavu Avodas Aaron. Even if you told me that Aaron and his sons were given the mitzvah of doing the service in the Mishkan, and they were given the special clothing, and all those mitzvahs predate the sin of the golden calf, lo kashya. She'afal gav shahoya Aaron ubon of Kohanim, yachol liyo shigam ha'bukharos yavodu. Says the Maharal, there was a period of time where the Kohanim meaning the descent, Aaron and his sons, and the Bechorim and the firstborn, were both charged with doing, with being involved in the Mishkan and doing the Avodah. How so? Because he says, "Shiyu b'makom halazim la'aron la'ezra kibemuchach kroy." As the Pesukim indicates, says the Maral, the Bechorim were not, the role of the Bechorim was not taken over post Chet HaEgel by the Kohanim, but rather by the Levir. Meaning, the original plan, had the Bechorim not sinned, was that the Bechorim would be involved in serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Mishkan, but so to speak, as Levir. What do the Levim do? The Levim help out the Kohan. Right? The Levim, they sing, they open gates, you know, they're of service to the Kohanim. But even in the original plan, even before the Bechorim sinned, there was always a concept that there would be Kohanim and they'd be descendants of Aaron, and they would be the ones who would probably be primarily charged with the Avodah in the Mishkan. Says the Maral, the Pesukim indicate that I'm right. How does Sukkim indicate that he's right? So Rabbi Hartman here in his notes writes that it's based on the following pasuk. The pasuk is from Midbar Paragimel, pasuk Yudeis. There the Torah says, "Va'ani yinei lakachi yitaladim yitok b'nei Yisrael. I have taken, I Hashem have taken the Levim from the midst of b'nei Yisrael. Tachat kol b'chor teterecha b'nei Yisrael. V'hoi we alavim." The Levim are going to be for Hashem instead of the Bechorim. And Rashi there comments, "Al yidei Bechorim zikisi bohem ulakachim tzmura son. Lefi shahayfa avodah Bechorim v'alavim shlo avodah avodah zara nivchu v'tachteim." Says Rashi, again, I'll just quote what the pasuk itself says, when the Bechorim sinned with the golden calf, the Levim came in instead of the Bechorim, not the Kohanim, the Levim. And ani yinei lakachi of ha-Levim b'chol t'nei Yisrael. Tachas kol b'chol tezor rechom b'nei Yisrael. So says the Maral, just read the Pesuk, that's what the Pesuk says. The Pesuk doesn't say that the Bechorim were knocked out by the Kohanim. The Kohanim were always, they were part of plan A. The Bechorim were knocked out by the Levim. Now, there's a problem on the surface with this Maral, because the role of the Levim is not to offer karpanos. And yet it's very, very clear in context that what are the Bechorim doing? Bechorim are offering karpanos, but that's clear. Are you talking about married in Israel? By Yalu Olos, right? The Bechorim here, by, you know, in the days leading up to the giving of the Torah, are offering up karpanos. So that's not a role of Levim, it's a role of Kohanim. So what are you talking about? You know, it's nice to say Sparas and all of that, but I mean, it doesn't fit the pasuk. So come to Maral. Not all of the Pesukim also, especially the talking about, right? For sure. The Eila Haksos, Loma Aaron Uvanov Kohanim, Ba'abachorot Yun Yidachim Ba'avodah Ve'azayim Lochotu. So I don't understand. So right now, the Bechorim are still doing the Avodah, they're doing the actual Karbonos, and yet you're telling me that when the Mishkan is built, even Plan A was to have Aaron and the Kohanim doing the Avodah and the Bechorim relegated to the role of Levim. That's not fair. Why should they be relegated to the role of Levim? They didn't do anything wrong yet in this understanding. Shein v'kasha, shebishil she'avdu shelo b'mishkan, yavdu b'mishkan, after Maral, just because the Bechorim did actual Avodah, the actual Karbanos prior to the building of the Mishkan, so is it automatic that they should continue doing the Avodah once the Mishkan is built? Shizel Kiddusha Yisera. The Mishkan is in a category by itself. It's an extra special degree of sanctity. But Rabbi Hartman explains the notes as follows. Right? The fact that since time immemorial, the Bechorim, the firstborn, brought Karbanos, doesn't necessarily entitle them to bring Karbanos in the Mishkan. The Mishkan represented a new phenomenon which had not existed up until that time in history. The Mishkan represented a place where God's Shechina, God's divine presence, came down, and whatever that means, you know, but there was a Hashroach Hashchina, there was a revelation of God's presence in the Mishkan, in a way in which that if Yisam built a Mizbeach somewhere and offered up a carbon on it, the Shechina was not present to the same extent. So even in Plan A, the Bechorim would have a role in the Mishkan, but not the ultimate role in the Mishkan. The ultimate role in the Mishkan was given to Aaron and his sons to be Kohanim, because the sense was, however HaKadosh Baruch Hu determined this, that Aaron and his sons would be better equipped to be specialists bringing Karbanos in the Mishkan, given the excess amount of Kedusha that existed in the Mishkan above and beyond what had existed up until that point. So the original plan was the Bechorim, who had always been bringing Karbanos, would transition into the Levi role once the Mishkan was built, and there would be this new creation of a class of Kohanim, and that was the original plan as well. With Chosofon Legamri Ze'eno, prior to the Chet HaEgel to knock the Bechorim out entirely doesn't make sense, but to make them Kohanim also didn't make sense. And therefore, Ulafikar Ein Kasher Mashanem Bikte Kohanim Aaron Levanov, don't be bothered by the fact that Parshas Tetzaveh already is outlining a role for Kohanim and for Aaron and his sons and the like, even if you assume that takes place before Chet HaEgel, because indeed, the original plan included Kohanim. The original plan was not for the Bechorim to do the ultimate Avodah. The Mishkan is in a class by itself. That's really the idea which the Maharal is bringing out over here. Whoa. Not so simple, right? Maybe, according to Rashi, you could say that. Rashi doesn't say that. Rashi just says chronologically that the Mishkan was built, the command to build the Mishkan was revealed after the Chet HaEgel. He doesn't say it's a cause and effect relationship, but okay, let's grant that with the Rashi. The Ramban for sure disagrees with that, because the Ramban says that the commandment to build the Mishkan predates the Chet HaEgel, so for sure it was not a kapara for the Chet HaEgel. Right, the problem is if you're going to use that logic by the same token, the Bechorim should also be serving in the Mishkan, right? Let them atone for their role in the Chet HaEgel, right? So, you know, it's hard to cut that both ways, you know, so to speak. Yeah. No, in other words, the original plan was that some Levim, i.e. the family of Aaron, would be selected to be Kohanim, right? So in other words, you know, there is a family of Levim who have a special status, right? But the Levim other than the family of Aaron would just be Levim. In other words, they'd be from Shevet Levi. They wouldn't have any particular role with it. Yeah, right. In other words, they wouldn't have any particular role, you know, that would be different than anybody else. Up until this point, you were just a Levi.
You were supposed to just go ahead and
What's the lesson of Rashi over there? Up until that point, you right. So I think the way the Maharal would interpret that Rashi, in other words, it says, you know, beginning of Parshas Shmos, up until now you were lazy, and now you're going to become a Kohen. I think the way the Maharal would understand that is, you know, up until now you were a lazy, meaning that you were a descendant of lazy. What does that mean? It means to tell you, descendant of lazy. It's true, Aaron Alevi. What does it mean now to be a Levi? Right? I mean, you know. What's that? Right, okay. So maybe he would have gotten the second Aliyah also, right? Now, so in other words, it's not clear in Rashi that being a Levi at that juncture meant that you were doing anything special in the Mishkan. Up until that, you were a Levi. In other words, You know, there was a yichus that went with Levi, because again, there was, you know, you were from the tribe that was special in Mitzrayim. That is, Shevet Levi and Mitzrayim kept Bris Milah, and you know, they were the clergy and all of that. In other words, there was a yichus that went with Levi, but that didn't necessarily translate into doing anything in the Mishkan. Right? They were nobody. They were miyuchosim. Okay, so I was just a miyuchos. And now, you know, you were somebody who had a special family, stature, special status. But now you're going to become involved in the avoda. It is possible to read Rashi that way. I suspect the Maral would have to read Rashi that way, you know, in light of his comments over here. I'm not sure. This Maral is a print, you know, it's, two volumes for Shmos. I don't have Parsha Shmos over here. I have to take a look in the Maral over there and see if he comments on that. But, you know, presumably you couldn't make that Rashi work, even according to this explanation of the Maral. He was buying, according to Maral, he was buying the right to offer up Karbanos up until the Mishkan, and once the Mishkan would be built, to be, you know, involved in the Mishkan in a secondary kind of fashion. Right? That's according to Maral, that's what he was buying.
What about
it?
The car is not inherited.
Okay. So I'm not sure where you're going.
I guess I'm only going for himself, or all the descendants too. Because if you see that Asa's car could also be in the car.
Right. I'm not sure, but I'm not. Either way, it could work with the Maral's chat. Right? Otherwise, I don't think, you know, you have to. Either way, that Rashi over there could work in with this Maral. Okay, we'll pick up next week. We'll see everybody. Good Shabbos.